I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, represented by CBS News Radio. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're staying on the surface of the planet Earth at Boca Chica, Texas, for a spectacular vision of the future. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. He is my guide on space engineering. And the video is coming from Boca Chica, that is SpaceX's star center. The images were astonishing of the stacking of Super Heavy, the stacking of two gigantic pieces of a rocket booster. Bob, a very good evening to you. What was I looking at when we saw one gigantic booster, metal, stacked on top of another? What are they assembling there? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, Super Heavy is intended as essentially the first stage of SpaceX's heavy lift rocket. And the heavy lift rocket, the upper stage will be Starship. And the idea is to build a completely reusable rocket, completely reusable. Both first and second stages will fly, but then return to the ground to be reused. And they hope within days, if they get it right the way they want. And Super Heavy is that first stage, and it's intended to basically mimic what the Falcon 9's first stage does. It will launch the second stage vertically. Once the second stage separates, and that's Starship, Super Heavy will then use its engines to control its return either to the landing site back at wherever it's launched, or to a landing site on the ocean. And SpaceX has purchased two former floating oil platforms, and they're refurbishing them as potential both landing and launch sites for Super Heavy Starship. And so that's what you're looking at. And the first prototype of that Super Heavy, they call it Booster Number 1, BN1. It's about 220 feet tall, which makes it about the same height as a Falcon 9 rocket. And that's both stages, the Falcon 9. And when the Starship's put on top of it, it's going to be almost 400 feet tall, which would put it about 30 feet taller than a Saturn V rocket. And this is going to be a rocket that will be completely reusable, not expendable like the Saturn V was, and it'll put in orbit as much payload. So that's what you were looking at with Super Heavy. And so they're prepping that first booster. That first booster prototype will not be flown. Their plans right now are to use it for tank testing, fueling processes, countdown processes, making sure everything, the designs are valid. They are building the second prototype even as we speak, and that one is supposed to be the one that will fly.
What is inside those tubes, Bob? Is that the pipes and the gas tanks and the engines are all inside already, pre-assembled?
Well, I don't have the exact picture you're looking at, but, you know, this is a system that has to be fueled, so you're going to have fuel lines. And remember, the way they've been doing this is they don't have a launch tower. And the way the traditional design is that fuel is put in near the top of the tank and lets gravity pump it down, drop it in. And so you have a fuel line that goes up the tower and then down into the tank, down, then across to the tank and down. They've been fueling from the bottom using pressure. And so those fuel lines are actually part of the rocket, it appears. And they attach, from what I can tell, the only attachment points I've known have been at the bottom. So that's my guess. I mean, I'm not an engineer, and I also don't have inside knowledge on how they design.
And that tall, it's two tubes, one tube on top of another. They're going to test a version of this the way they've been testing a Starship. They're going to take it off and go up to 50,000 feet and then come back down again?
Plan, as far as I know, is initially this first prototype is only going to be used for tank tests. As I said, it will never launch. The next prototype will probably do a hop of some kind. We don't know exactly how high. And it's going to see if it can go up and come down. It will not have the same kind of complexity as Starship. It does not have to turn to its side, you know, and mimic the space shuttle. It's going to work just like the Falcon 9 first stage. It merely has to simply point down and land on its base. The base is on the bottom anyway from the launch. So it has a simpler operation, but they'll test it. They're going to definitely do landing tests with this, and then they'll move to higher flights. And once again, their goal is, their internal goal is to try to do an orbital flight before the end of this year, and that would mean they'd have to combine a version of Super Heavy with Starship.
We're headed to Mars. That's what's exciting here. We're building at Boca Chica. We're headed to Mars. They're looking for a landing site. What are the restrictions? What are the hopes, Bob, of a landing site?
Well, I broke this story back in 2019. SpaceX has been requesting images from NASA's Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter for a particular area of Mars called Arcadia Plantatia, and it's near two mountain ranges, the Phalagra Mountains and the Erebus Mountains. And this story was known back in 2019. Well, SpaceX more recently paid consulting fees to a bunch of scientists to put together a committee to review the images as taken and down select from those images four primary potential landing sites with three backup sites. Now, these are not the kind of large ellipses that have been used for the rover landings and the landers in the past. These are just single images which have the most potential to be a landing site. And so they've down-selected out of four different places, and I've got images on Behind the Black of those four primary sites, and they explain the reasons why they have less. They have a lot of evidence of shallow ice, lots of evidence of shallow ice and water content in the ground. And these four primary sites are relatively flat and therefore will have not a lot of rough terrain to work your way around. The three backup sites are a little bit more inside the mountainous areas, so they have higher terrain features, greater topographical variety near them, but the actual landing sites themselves are still flat. The pictures are still flat. And so now the SpaceX has these four primary sites. What they need to do is do a lot more investigation, not only of the sites, but how to design their engineering to make a landing there practical and safe, and then also potentially have the ability to, have the ability to take off again. And so that's what comes next. There's a lot of research to do, but we now have a pretty good idea of where they're going to land, John, and it's in that 30 to 60 degree zone where they find lots of glacial evidence on Mars, and some of these are in the northern lowland plains. There's a lot of evidence of glacial ice sheets just under the surface. And so that's where you're going to go. There's lots of water, lots of opportunity for both colonization and development because of that.
Starlink, the satellites, the pearl of necklaces around the Earth from SpaceX, launching them all the time. They're going to work with NASA to avoid collisions, to deconflict.
Yeah, all right. So let's go back in history here, John. The Outer Space Treaty written back in the 60s has a lot of – I mean, I've complained about this for a lot of reasons having to do with property rights. But when you get – it's some of its initial purpose was to require spacefaring nations to work together in certain respects. And one of those respects is to avoid collisions in space and to avoid one country's equipment – interfering with another country's equipment, and including also making sure that their equipment doesn't crash on people's heads. And that's what the Outer Space Treaty accomplished for the spacefaring nations. Well, we're now getting to a point where we have spacefaring companies in the West, where we have private enterprise. And so NASA and SpaceX, because SpaceX is launching this gigantic constellation of thousands of Starlink satellites, there's issues of making sure they don't collide with anything. So NASA and SpaceX signed an agreement this week whereby, and this is essentially putting SpaceX in this specific area, putting them under the same rules as the Outer Space Treaty. It doesn't mean they're going to break those rules anyway, but this now makes it official, to coordinate with NASA and SpaceX and share information about their satellite constellations to make sure they can avoid collisions and launch conflicts. I mean, launches are also an issue because you got to make sure you're launching and the rocket's path to orbit won't conflict with the satellite already in orbit. So you got to work together. And so this is an agreement to the two companies to share information between the company, SpaceX, and NASA, the government agency.
I'm surprised, Bob. They haven't had this agreement before.
Well, it isn't real. To be honest, this is just a beer making it official.
All right.
SpaceX has been very good about cooperating with everybody on this up to now anyway.
NASA, big news. This is the James Webb Space Telescope. Not the replacement for Hubble. It's a completely different understanding of the system. But it's been building for years and years and years. It's eaten up the planetary budget. They're going to launch it. When, Bob?
Well, right now, NASA is confident they will get the James Webb Infrared Space Telescope. I emphasize infrared because that's why it's not a Hubble replacement. It doesn't look at optical light. They are very confident they're going to launch in October. They still have some issues, technical issues, that could eat up their margin, but they are pretty confident those issues will be handleable, be able to make it work, and a Ariane Space Falcon, Ariane 5 will launch it in October. That will only put it 10 years behind schedule and 20 times over budget, from $500 million to $10 billion. And as you say, it's not a Hubble replacement. It's an infrared telescope designed to look in very high resolution in infrared at the very deep cosmology.
We look forward to a success, Bob. It will be spectacular if they pull it off. Yes. All right. Finally, the president, Mr. Biden, has nominated a colleague from the Senate days. They were both in the Senate once upon a time together, Mr. Nelson of Florida. What is significant? Why did he choose a senior figure for NASA?
Senior is a really good understatement, John. I mean, this is maybe peas in a poke, if that's the phrase. Biden, you know, has his age issues. And Nelson has his age issues. He's pretty old. He's 78, I think. And last time I saw him live during hearings 3-4 years ago, he then struck me as showing his age. He was confused at times, unaware of some recent developments in commercial space, and he repeatedly struggled to express himself on the simplest topics during those hearings. And this is now 4 years later. Why did Biden pick him? Besides the fact that they're both old and maybe senile, and therefore the bureaucracy will run things, he picked him because Nelson has been a space geek for his whole life. He actually flew on the shuttle, so he's actually has space wings, and he really cares, though he has always been a big proponent of big space. And he only came to the bandwagon of commercial space after it showed signs of success. And so I think it's one hand washing the other. He's been a favorite of big space, so he's funded all these big space companies, and so this is his reward.
We're all lucky, Bob, if we get to the senior position that Mr. Nelson and Mr. Biden. I have ambitions, Bob. I'm not 78 yet, but I want to be 78 someday. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. When we come back, we're going to honor a figure of NASA who is fundamental to the great success of the Apollo program. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show.